Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple.
203 here on the Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer. It is after hours here on the Fan. Got you till 5 a.m. Al and Jerry come your way at that time. Plenty of your reactions here. We'll have a very special guest coming up in a few hours. He doesn't know about it, but I do. And once he gets here, I will let him know about it. But we have a very special guest coming up here in a couple of hours. There needs to be some type of seminar, some type of class, some type of meeting, some type of PowerPoint presentation. Do they still do those? Some type of Zoom meeting with all the teams in baseball, not just the Yankees, every team in baseball when it comes to the ABS challenge system. Because it can be used to your advantage. But oftentimes when I'm watching these games, I'm like, these players have no idea what they're doing. You need to sit everybody down. And I know they're millionaire athletes and they're adults, but you got to treat them like children. And you say, listen, if this is fifth inning or earlier, you cannot challenge something unless you are 195% certain you're going to get it right, or it is a critical moment early in the game. Critical, meaning, hey, this could walk in a runner. You know, there's a tough pitcher on the mound. Maybe we have our best pitcher. We can win the game 1-0, 2-1. So every run is just vital. Or your ace is on the mound, he's struggling, and you're trying to get him out of an inning. And your catcher feels like that pitch was close. If we win it, we can get him off the mound, he could settle down, and this could lead to a victory. That's the only times I would use it early on in the game. And then late in the game, if I have two challenges, I'll be a little loose with one of them because I know I have another one in my back pocket. But if I only have one, like the Yankees did tonight, and Anthony Volpe in a situation where the ball's right down the damn middle, and he challenges it. That's number one. And number two, even if he got the call right, it wasn't that critical of a situation, even though it was late in the game. He wouldn't have gotten a walk. So to me, it's like Glengarry Glen Ross with Alec Baldwin. You know, he's got to come in and say, you know, coffee's for closers. Aaron Judge is the one guy on the team that should be using the challenges, and he basically never does it. So that's what I would do. And it's not just the Yankees. It's everybody. It's everybody. I've heard Gary Cohen talk about it. I've heard Susan talk about it with Jazz not being good at the challenges. It's really across baseball. And I get it's a new system. I get it's only a couple months in. But it can be used to your advantage if you're smart about it. If you're shrewd about it. Not if you're just loose. If you're just, oh, well, you know what? I'm just going to use this challenge system on a pitch that would make the count now 1-0 instead of 0-1. And it's the second inning. Does that make any sense? I would take a play. I know. Look, you got to treat him like a child. I would say, if you had won that challenge, because I don't want to say you're being selfish in those spots. I just think you're not fully grasping the gravity of these challenges. They are very important. They could be used later on in the game to overturn a critical pitch that could lead to a victory. That could be the difference in you getting to the postseason or winning a division. That's the type of weight I would put on this stuff. Because it feels like to me when they're challenging early on, it's not selfish. It's more just, laissez-faire, whatever. And that's just wasting them. So if you're going to have them, and baseball put these in here to, you know, help teams out. If you're going to have them, don't waste them. Let's go to Dave in Belleville here on the Fan. It's after hours, Lugie in the late night. What's up, Dave?
Good, Lugie. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
This is the second night that I got in my car from work and you started talking about the challenges because nothing frustrates me more. I'm watching the game the other night,
yeah.
Bottom of the second, 2-0 count, two outs, nobody on, and the guy challenges. I mean, what are you gaining by challenging a 2-0 pitch in the second inning?
Nothing.
Nothing to gain.
Nothing. And that's where, like I said, it's almost to the point where I don't think the player's being selfish. I just don't think they understand the full gravity of these challenges. And that's where, if they haven't, organizations across the board need to drill in the head of the players, don't challenge early in the game unless it is just, you could tell the moment, you should be able to tell as a baseball player if this is the time to challenge or not early in the game. And for some reason, across the board, nobody knows when to challenge. They know not to challenge. You know what I mean? They shouldn't be challenging.
Yeah. The third base coach in the first five innings, like you're saying, should, especially the younger players, should have a sign that, you know, says do not challenge somebody before every pitch.
Yeah, the problem is you can't do that. It's on the player. They can't look at the dugout. They can't look at any of the coaches. It does have to do with once the player's out there, it's like telling your kids, you know, look both ways before you cross the street or be a safe driver. You can't be in the car with them, so you have to trust them when they're at the plate. But that's why you have to take them to driving school, and they got to take defensive driving. It's like these players need to be schooled on this. I get the vibe that they haven't been because they're so god-awful at it. Like, across the board, everybody, whether they're afraid to challenge, when they challenge at the wrong time or in unnecessary moments, or when you only have one challenge like tonight with Volpe, and it's right down the middle of the plate, and you challenge it, makes absolutely no sense.
I was listening to that on the radio, and Susan said, well, he's challenging that pitch. You know, it's a weird time. And then they replace you like, oh my.
She was honest about it with Jazz, too, you know, that he's bad at it. And even Aaron Boone after the game, and you know Aaron loves to defend his players, defend them. Even he didn't defend Volpe after that. I mean, he basically said, yeah, look, it was right down the middle. He shouldn't have challenged it. And he's 100% right.
It's too valuable to waste on something like that. Like you said, late in the game, you're going to need it, you know. And even if it's a time where you know you're wrong, it's worth a challenge anyway because you got nothing to lose. You know, if you don't have it, then you can't even do that.
Yeah, listen, the flip side is, well, you save your challenges. It's a 7-0 game. Okay, fine. That's fine. I still rather have them in my back pocket late innings. If I'm up 9-0 and I don't use them, great. But I'd rather that than the game be 2-1 and I'm sitting there in the eighth inning and my opponent has both challenges and I'm sitting there with no challenges because my players are challenging, you know, the first pitch in the second inning where it wouldn't have mattered or impacted the game.
Now, where do you see this going in the future? You think it's going to stay as challenges or you think it's eventually going to go to full
robot? Full robot, yeah, I think it will get to that point. I don't know when, but I do think it will get to that point at some point where it's just the full robot. Yeah.
It really makes the umpires look bad because it's public knowledge of what their record is, I guess, with the calls.
Well, if it's challenged or not. Look, we've had some games this year where they've been embarrassed. There's no other way to say it, where there's been six overturns. I mean, it is what it is. That it's been put in there to obviously challenge things that you think are close, and if the umpire is going to look bad, oh well, you're a professional, that's the way it goes.
It's going to make him better anyway.
Yeah, well, you hope so, at least, because now, the eye in the sky, and I appreciate the call, Dave, the eye in the sky is watching, and I think it's so exciting, that anticipation, the graphic on TV is awesome. I love it. I think it's a great thing added to baseball. And it could be used as such a weapon late in games. But you got to be smart about it. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Let's go to Phil in Spring Valley. What's up, Phil?
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snaps, it is the refreshing!
Hey, how you doing, Loogie?
Good, good. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing good. I mean, tonight's Yankee game was, half enjoyable, half annoying. But, hopefully they turn it around in the next game. But, I mean, when I look at this Yankees team, I mean, there's a lot of pitching depth going on starting-wise and bullpen. I think they tend to figure those things out. But what concerns me the most with this team is the amount of players that are being put in the lineup daily who are struggling in their own, in their own senses, meaning you have too many guys going through adjustments that they're working on, Volpe working on things, McMahon still working seemingly to try to find what's going on. You have too many guys that are so trying to figure out where they are, what they're doing, that, in a sense, it's hard to run this, have the offense consistency when, you know, you have Judge, Rice, and Bellinger at the top of that lineup. Stanton's injured. And after that, you just don't know in a game if anyone's available. And plus,
and they're impossible to trust, you know, outside of the guys you just mentioned. Now, Jazz is coming along now, so he's entering the circle of trust. But, yeah, outside of Rice, Judge, Bellinger, and Stanton, when he's healthy, there isn't a lot of guys that you can lean on. There's just way too many batting averages under 200.
Right. It's almost like I feel like it's almost these are guys where if McMahon was the only one not hitting, or if it was, you know, Wells the only one not hitting, or Grisham the only one not hitting, we could say, hey, you know what? McMahon's good defense. Grisham's good defense. Wells is a good catcher. Jazz is fast. Volpe's a good fast player. But these guys who, by the way, it's the Yankees have purposely, because they could be used in more than one way, are just not doing that. Now, as much as that's a concern, I do think the Yankees will work on that, because I do think there's a certain amount of desperate feeling you have seen in the Yankees this year with bringing up Spencer Jones, with the moves they made. So I am putting that trust in there.
Well, listen, Phil, a lot was made about the Yankees running it back. And ultimately, we're going to find out, you know, if they keep this roster that they have, ultimately what they do in October will settle the debate of whether or not they were smart in doing that. That being said, I don't think Brian Cashman will be stubborn about it at the deadline, meaning if Wells continues to be this bad, if McMahon is bad, if the bullpen is bad, Brian Cashman is going to make changes. He's not going to say, well, listen, I want to die on this hill of running it back. No, he's going to add players. He's going to add a third baseman. He's going to add a catcher. He's going to add a couple of bullpen arms. You have to, because to me, you can't go down with the ship here, because there's going to be a lot of unhappy people, especially those that didn't want to see this team run it back.
Oh, for sure. I just wanted to make a quick Knicks point in that. We keep talking about, you know, the amount that they've sort of shut down this series, and you're making some great points. I think the one thing that we need to focus on, and a lot with this Knicks team, is actually the lows. So, for example, if we look at last year, of how many situations they went through, the games were not blowouts for them. They were tight.
Yeah.
They constantly had to learn. They also had many heartbreaking games, and they've learned from that too. They as well have had this year where they were down to the Hawks and stood up and absolutely went berserk in a historical run. I think they understand where they do best, and that's one thing. Number two is I was not necessarily a Mike Brown fan, but he has shown that he could be an adjuster, an in-game adjuster that Thibodeau could not do.
Yeah, listen, Tibbs is never I don't care if Josh Hart's a leg fell off, he's not going to sham it in that game and benching Josh Hart in a million years.
I mean, he's not going to him, and believe me, when he would just literally tell Brunson, like, it's on you, that's it, like, everyone else can't have anything, like, let's give up. I feel like in a certain way, what Mike Brown has done for this team is he's opened up the idea of sort of just, guys, in a game, we're going to have to figure things out. It's not just about defense and offense. It's about adjustments in the game and figuring out what could we do to win. And the difference between good teams and bad teams is they find a way to win. And this Knicks team could figure that out. And I think that that's where the Cavs series is down, because they figured out a win when they were not at their best. Could you imagine when they actually get a chance to see what the Cavs are running and now get to go ahead and do adjustments?
And that's why, Phil, I think this series is a wrap. I think the Knicks blow them out in game two. They had their moment where they were rusty and the Cavs were up 22, and that was a chance for Cleveland to get a split here in New York and allow the series to perhaps get to a six game or something like that. Now, I don't see how Cleveland recovers. You're right. You're going to get the Knicks' best punch now. They're going to be a hell of a lot better in game two on both ends of the floor. And if needed, they're going to make adjustments. If Hart continues to struggle, I think you'll see a lot more of Shamet. And OG, you know, it took a little while in that first game, but by the end of it, he was a demon on defense, and he was a big reason why, along with Shamet, Bridges, and Brunson, that they made the comeback that they did.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Boogie.
No, you got it, bro. Good points. Good conversation. Mike Brown, and this is why you, and good on Mike Brown here too, because, and we're going to discuss this even more at length once they're in the finals, because this is the series once they get through this, and they will, but once it's official, this was the series where the Mike Brown hire became a home run and became the justification of getting rid of Tibbs and hiring Mike Brown. Because the Knicks, in particular, Dolan, Leon Rose, were ridiculed for letting go of Tibbs, for firing him, for kicking him to the curb, for saying, beat it. Thanks for the memories, building this program up, but we believe there's a ceiling with you. We believe you haven't gotten the best out of Bridges and Cat. You don't play the bench. You don't develop young players. You're kind of a little bit of a stubborn, and we just don't want to do business with you anymore. You don't get with the program. You don't want to work with the committee, with the coaches, with Leon, the whole thing. So, thanks, but you're out. They were ridiculed for this. Now listen, and it's their prerogative. I would have liked to have heard from Leon Rose after the decision for Tibbs to be fired. I think that it was, and they don't talk a lot, we know that, but that, and that's their prerogative because, you know what, the place is going to be packed, so it is what it is, and we love the Knicks, so what are we going to like say, oh, because Leon Rose doesn't meet the media, we're going to boycott? No, of course not, but, and I don't need to hear from him all the time. You know, some general, I mean, you hear from David Stearns all the time, Cashman all the time, sometimes it's necessary, but I thought in that instance, Leon Rose meeting the media and just explaining to the fans, to the audience, why they made that decision. Because there were a lot of people, not everybody, but there were a lot of people questioning it because the team got to the Eastern Conference Finals. They were a team that was climbing up the ladder. They didn't go backwards. They knocked off the defending champs. They got to the Eastern Conference Finals. And then you let Tibbs go, who was, in many ways, a popular coach. It felt like he was popular amongst the players. So, on the surface, when you dug deeper, it made sense. But just when you got the news on the surface, it was like, that's shocking. So, I felt like, and it's not like you had to sit there and answer a million questions, but even if you did a one-on-one or a couple of reporters and just explained it to everybody, I thought that was an opportunity that they could have taken advantage of if they wanted to get that message out. They didn't, all good. But they were ridiculed for it. And then the process of the hiring of a new coach, it was back to the LOL Knicks stuff where, oh, they're calling everybody up, asking for their coach who has a job, and they're getting told no, and the phone's getting hung up. And, hold on, Charlie. I got another guy on the line about some white walls. I'll get back to you later. You know, it's like a scene from Major League. And then the Knicks just became a punchline and a joke like they had been for all those years, which was completely and utterly asinine. It was more just about, let's make fun of the Knicks. Let's make fun of the Knicks. The Knicks did what they should have done, their due diligence. And everybody said they didn't have a plan. No, they had a plan. Their plan was Tibbs wasn't the guy because of the ceiling, because of not playing the bench, because of not unlocking players that Leon Rose brought here to get this team to a championship in Bridges, in Cat. He wasn't developing, Tibbs wasn't, young players. I don't think he was necessarily working in unison with the coaching staff and upper management, ownership, the whole deal. So there were enough reasons, and I'm sure there's a lot of truth to the, yeah, there was players that bellyached about him. So there was a laundry list of reasons to get rid of him. And then once he's gone, they'd be idiots not to do their due diligence and call up and say, hey, is Eric Spoelstra available? Who wouldn't do that? Hey, is Jason Kidd available? Well, he's available now, but wouldn't you do that if you were Leon Rose, if you were upper management of the Knicks? Of course you would. That's exactly what they did, and they were made fun of. The Knicks don't have a plan, and Dolan is meddling, and all this crap that I heard throughout the summer before Brown was hired, which was complete BS. And then they hire Mike Brown to, I would say, a golf clap. Overall, you know, some were furious. Others would have said it was the greatest hire ever. But I would say the average person, average Knick fan, gave it a golf clap. All right, Mike Brown, okay. He's coached some stars. You know, he's got a good resume. He got to the finals, the whole thing. But Mike Brown, especially in this playoff run, is showing you why he was hired. He's unlocked Bridges. He's playing his best basketball as a Knick. Cat, outside of game one where he was awful, he's unlocked Karl-Anthony Towns. The bench is phenomenal. He went to Shamit in game one, which Tibbs is not doing. Tibbs is going to stick with Josh Hart, and the Knicks lose that game. Period. Just like they lost last year against the Pacers in game one. And then they lost game two. And then with their backs against the wall where the series was over, all right, let's get DeLon Wright and Landry Shamet out there. When it's over, though. So Tibbs waited too long because he doesn't really want to go to the bench, where Mike Brown had no problem doing that with Shamet in game one. And it was a brilliant move. And Shamet rewarded Brown. And now three wins away from getting to the finals, to where there are no questions of whether or not the Knicks did the right thing. The way this team is playing right now on both ends of the floor, this wouldn't happen under Tibbs. He wouldn't be playing the bench. They would have depth, but he would just scoff at it. Because I said this even last year or other years with Tibbs. I'm like, it's not that they don't have depth. It's just that he doesn't utilize any of it. He doesn't play the player. And you got to do it from step one, or like day one, which is exactly what... I remember the first couple games of the year, it was like, I'm getting confused with these rotations. I think they picked somebody out of the sixth row to come in at one point. I was like, I didn't even realize this guy was on the team. But you know what? That plan throughout the year is now paying dividends here in the playoffs. Major dividends. And that's a credit to Mike Brown, and it's an even bigger credit to the organization, to Leon Rose and to James Dolan. Because they ultimately made the correct decision. And Leon Rose, who's been unreal as the architect of this franchise. The only job that could be better than what Leon Rose has done is if somebody, maybe Muji, can turn the Jets around. That's the only one. That is the new Everest. The Knicks used to be Everest. Now the Jets are Everest. If you could turn the Jets around now, you have climbed Everest, walked all the way down, and then climbed it again. But that's where the Knicks were. They were the Jets. A laughingstock, the worst franchise in the NBA, arguably the worst franchise in sports. And Leon Rose turned everything around. Yet, there have been a lot of moves, including getting rid of Tibbs, trading for Bridges, all the picks he gave up, trading for Cat, giving up popular players like DiVincenzo, giving up popular players like IQ and RJ Barrett for OG Anunoby. These were moves, not across the board, but these were new moves that were criticized, that were questioned. It's like, and I get, blindly, faithfully, you're not going to just say, oh, Leon Rose can do no wrong. I understand that. But at some point, Leon Rose has to earn your trust. He climbed Everest. He's got the Knicks three wins away from the finals for the first time in 27 years. Because brick by brick, he has built this team. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Let's go to Phil in Manhattan. What's up, Phil?
Good morning. You know, the Knicks fans today, of which I still consider myself one, you know, they're treading the road, the same road that I tread in 1970. In 1973, I tread that road twice. I know it was a long time ago, over half a century ago.
Yes, it was.
You know, let me tell you something. I want to make a point about this.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
It's such a great feeling, even a half a century later, which is why if the Knicks win this championship, and I agree with you, they got a great chance of winning. This is something that every Knicks fan will carry with them for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. And you know what? For you, Phil, for somebody that saw it, for you now to wait the... Because I haven't had to wait the entire time. I'm only 40, so I haven't been on the planet as to have all the years that you know you've waited for. You can respect it because you've seen it, but then you've also had to wait for it. And that makes it, I think, even more special because sometimes you take it for granted a little bit when a team wins a couple championships and you're younger or whatever. But now waiting for it, to get it again, to have this run, to have what we had in game one, which was, for all Knicks fans, one of the most exciting, thrilling games, playoff games of our lifetime. It's extra special to Knicks fans, young and old.
And I agree with you. And just one other point. Mm-hmm. You know, when the Knicks won those championships back then, they had a reputation before them, before Red Holtzman became the coach, and he acquired some of the greatest players in the history of basketball,
oh, yeah,
of being bottom dwellers. They were like the New York Mets, okay? They came from like nowhere, and all of a sudden, they're a great team. And so it's a great memory for me. And I'll tell you, I'm rooting for the Knicks, and I really hope that they could, you know, replicate what they did so many years before.
No, listen, we all are. And Phil, you're not alone. There are Knicks fans out there that, you know, 50 plus years ago, that certainly were alive and old enough to enjoy it, remember it. But there are many Knicks fans that are my age, a little bit older than me, certainly younger than me, that have not had the taste of a championship. We've seen them in the finals. One instance, the team had basically no shot. The other one, they had a great shot and should have won that series. And then I would be in Phil's boat. I would be calling up Sports Talk Radio, or I would be just calling myself and or talking to myself saying, you know what, I remember when I was younger. And I remember Patrick, and I remember Starks, and I remember that championship against the Rockets, and now I'm living it again. Unfortunately, they did not win that series. And then they got to the finals again a few years later and didn't win again. Although that time it was a miracle run just to get there. They ran into a buzzsaw. That was one of those ones where you were happy to be there. Which it kind of felt like this year was going to be, oh, we'll just be happy, we'll get to the finals. And not when you start to see things like the ball, Shamit's rim out and then rim in, and you start to feel like it's destiny. You start to feel like the stars are aligning. You start to feel like the wait is over. Not only 27 years since the finals, 50 plus since the championship. They have all the ingredients. They have the talent. They have the experience. They have the depth. And I would underline that like three times because depth wins championships. You need the stars, but you need the role players. You need the depth. You need the bench. They have a coach that's firing on all cylinders. They have this is a team that's been climbing up the ladder. So it could be their time now. Because sometimes that's the way sports works, which is why I don't think the Spurs are winning the championship. As talented as they are, and Wembanyama is a video game. He's an NBA 2K player that you create who is the tallest human on earth with the greatest handle, can hit three-pointers from half court. That's the kind of player you create in a video game. And Harper, who got injured tonight, is great, but he's 20 years old. Wemby is under 23. Castle, who had a rough night in game two, too many turnovers, but he is, although he had that dunk on iHeart, that was just all-timer. But they're super young, and they haven't climbed that ladder yet. And it's a credit to them that they're going to push this Thunder team, the defending champs, to the brink, and they have a damn good shot of winning the series. I just don't think they're going to win the championship because of that inexperience, because of that youth. And sometimes that youth is, well, we'll get back next year. We'll get back. The Knicks feel like a team that feels like this is their last shot. Even though it's not, although it could be, because you never know with health and things like that. But this feels like a Knicks team that this is our best shot. This might be our last shot. And if we don't win a championship here for this city, for this thirsty, starving fan base, if we don't do it here, we could have another 50 years, and nobody wants that. And I think that you could just see it on Brunson. He wears it. You could just see it on these other players. They wear it. They get it. They've been here now long enough to know the deal. This city, this fan base is ready to erupt for a championship, for a parade. And this team right now is putting up historical numbers, historical comebacks, historical leads at halftime, historical shooting numbers. Both ends of the floor, they've been phenomenal. They have all the ingredients. And now, as the cherry on top, a little bit of luck, which is what you need. You need all of that and a little bit of luck. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is after hours. It is a loogie here in the late night. We will get back to your calls. I'll explain coming up next why these are These next four games for the Yankees are major, major games, pivotal games early in the year. Plus, we'll talk more about the Knicks. We'll open up the conversation to the Mets as they try to go for a series split in Washington. That's coming up later today. I got you for another 2.5 hours here. Oh, by the way, we're going to have a very special guest coming up around 4 o'clock, so you don't want to miss that. The phone number to join the conversation, 888-808-1019. It is After Hours. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the Late Night here on The Fan.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snaps, it's really refreshing!
238, here on The Fan in New York City, Tommy Lugauer.
Lugie.
It is After Hours here on The Fan. We'll get back to your calls in just 1 second. The Fan Focus is presented by Chef IQ. Watch the game, not the grill. Get your gear at chefiq.com. It's May, but I do think the next four games for the Yankees are pivotal. They are currently 5 games back of the Rays in the loss column. 5. The Rays never lose. Now, eventually they'll come back to earth, but they are playing great baseball over the last 2 months of the start of the season. Yanks are 5 games back in the loss column. They got swept in Tampa earlier this year. 1 game left with Toronto, and then 3 at home with Tampa. If the Yankees have a bad 4-game stretch here, they could be 7 games in the loss column back from Tampa going into Memorial Day weekend or coming out of it. And that's a spot you don't want to be in. You know, Aaron Boone's teams at home in October, that's the sweet spot. Home field advantage, not having to play the wild card round, an extra round. It's a situation you don't want to be in. You want that bye. You know, the year they got to the World Series, the bye was in their favor, and they were able to roll to get there in 24. Have to play an extra round, to have to go on the road, to not have home field advantage. Not a place you want to be in, and not a place that Aaron Boone teams have thrived. So, as great as Tampa's been, and they've already beaten you 3 in a row in Tampa, you now have an opportunity to take the last game against Toronto. I think they're going to throw a bullpen game, so a situation the Yankees should be able to exploit. And then they have to get their lick back this weekend. Ideally, you sweep them. And now you put yourself in a situation where you're right there, right on their backside. But if things go badly, and you lose today, and then you lose 2 out of 3 to Tampa, and you're sitting there, and it's Memorial Day weekend is in the rearview mirror, and you're 7 games back in the loss column, 8 games back in the loss column, that's a pretty deep hole, and this team hasn't even gotten to June yet, which is generally the June swoon for Aaron Boone's teams. Now, maybe this is the swoon, the one they were just on, you know, 3 out of 7, or 3-7 in 10 games on the road trip, or just the bad baseball they had played coming into the series against Toronto. Maybe they already had their swoon, but maybe they haven't. And this team under Aaron Boone generally doesn't perform well in June. So to have a bad weekend, to be entering June, and to be that many games back of Tampa, who is playing probably over their head in terms of the amount of games they've won, which it seems like they've literally, I can't remember the last time they've lost. They do have a really good manager. They do play a small ball. They do have some pop for sure, some star players. But it's mostly just a team of grit and small ball and speed and defense and the little things, out of necessity, because they don't have a lot of money to spend, to say the least. But these are critical games for the Yankees. Critical. When you consider where they're at in the standings, who's coming into town after Toronto, and what month is coming up next. A month that has not been kind to this Yankee team under Aaron Boone. So the last thing you want, because normally, hey, you got a head start, you have a, you know, you're up 5 games in the loss column, and then you have a bad June, and it sort of evens it out. The last thing you want to do going into June is already be at a deficit, already be in a hole, already be looking up at Tampa and looking way up, which could potentially happen. Now, I think the Yankees will handle them at home. the Trop is a nightmare for the Yankees, but I think this is a matchup this weekend. The weather won't be great, so it probably won't be high-scoring games, which tend to be an issue for the Yankees in close spots, you know, close games. But I think the Yankees do find a way, and they better, because otherwise they're going to be looking up, and they're going to have a long hill to climb to get back in this race and to ultimately be in a situation where they can win the division, which I think is paramount. I think not having to play the first round, being home as far as home field, that is paramount for them. Even in a weak American League, I still would rather be in that situation. But as Aaron Boone says, it's all right in front of them, and it is. And they have an opportunity to finish this series off with a 3 out of 4 against Toronto and then take care of business against Tampa at home this weekend. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Dave is in Brooklyn. What's up, Dave?
Hey, what's going on? Hey. You know, the Yankees almost won tonight when Rosario was on a pitch. If he won 1 centimeter, and that's a base hit to center field, we tied the game.
Correct.
But I'm not upset because I'm so excited about Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
He came in, 6 up, 6 down, 3 Ks, throws 101 miles per hour. You know, if he can be the closer, man, this could be the guy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot to put on his plate at this point, but you can't deny the electricity. I mean, he was just absolutely filthy, and it's an arm that I'm sure Aaron Boone is going to utilize in some spots. I don't know about the ninth yet, but he's going to utilize him in big spots because his stuff is electric.
Yeah, 1 in a million arm. All right, love your show. Have a great one.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, and the bullpen still needs help, even with both Cruises. They still need another arm or two, at least, around the deadline, which is a long way to go, but the Yankees can figure it out until then. It's going to be tough to add arms this early. It's just the way baseball is right now. There aren't a lot of sellers this early because everybody thinks they have a shot, unless you're historically bad, unless you're the Rockies of last year, the White Sox a couple years ago, the A's a couple years before that. Most teams feel like they have a shot, especially late May. So they're not willing to give up players this early. You got to wait till the deadline, which I think is a little later than it normally is this year. It's been all over the place. It's like August 3rd. They got to stop this because I know people like Evan know what it is every year, but for the rest of us normal folk, who the heck knows what's going on? You think Al Dukes is driving into work right now? He knows when the MLB trade deadline is? All right, probably a bad example, but I barely even knew when it was. I knew it was later, but I didn't know the exact day until went. But I get a little bots in the brain sometimes. But I also, it's one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, it's the deadline's coming up. It used to always be July 31st. Ken Phelps. And now it's August 3rd. I'm sure there's a reason, and it really doesn't matter what the reason is. The bottom line is it's a little bit later than normal. And I think it was a little earlier than normal a couple years ago. So bottom line is it's in those dog days of the baseball season. So there's a long way to go before we're at that bridge to cross. And in the meantime, the Yankees, look, they have a major issue at catcher. Austin Wells is the worst offensive catcher in baseball, bar none. 5 RBIs, and we're going into Memorial Day. That is a major issue for this team. Let's go to George in Howell, New Jersey. What's up, George?
Hey, Bullis, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's happening?
You know, a Yankee fan, you know, my dad's a Mets fan. I'm watching the Yankees, and the biggest hole they have is the catcher. I'm wondering, you can't trade for a catcher. You know, that's the hardest thing to get. You could get relievers, but to get a catcher in New York and work with all the pitchers, why don't they put Rice back there for 2-3 games? He's going to be the first baseman.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not getting anything out of the catcher position. So why don't you put Rice in the catcher, put Goldschmidt at first, the guy that got hurt in center field, what's his name?
Grisham.
Put Carbonaro in right field. What do you got in center right now? What's his name?
Well, you could put Jones, you could put Bellinger, you could put, what are you saying, when Caballero gets back?
Yeah, put Carbonaro out there, put Volpe in short, take McMahon out and bring up Lombardi Jr. The kid's great.
Yeah, look, I could see Lombard having a role on this team late in the year for sure. Third base could be Volpe's, it could be Lombard's, it could be Rosario, probably more of a bench guy. The issue with Rice, and I suggested this before the season started, trading Wells, trading a couple of the players, getting a starting pitcher, which would be, you know, pretty good for them right now, although Freed, when he comes back, they'll be fine. But I even suggested Rice going to catcher during Wells' struggles. The only thing, though, is that you risk either Rice worrying about catching too much and getting on the same page with the pitchers and his offense dips, or it's a demanding position physically. He could get hurt. And the last thing you want is to, because Ben Rice has been at times your best hitter, certainly at worst your second best hitter. The last thing you would want, George, is for him to suffer an injury. That would be catastrophic.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do him 2 games a week. You know what I mean? I mean,
you're saying more in a spot. Yeah, but it's one of those things where he's still trying to figure out first base. Now, I hear you. In a perfect world, I would love to get Goldschmidt more at bats. He needs to have more at bats, not just against lefties. He's a professional hitter, a guy you want in the lineup. And offensively, you would be way better with Goldschmidt and Rice being your catcher first baseman combo, and you'd be better defensively at first base. But I just don't think it's realistic even for a couple of days. But the problem is Wells is an albatross, and you can't go to Ascara because he's not a major leaguer. They have a hole at catcher that there is just no answer for right now. They have nowhere to turn to fix it unless they go really off menu and off script and do what you are suggesting and I have suggested in the past, and that's go to Rice for either a couple games or permanently.
How was Rice last year?
Wells is better defensively. I think it's more just about this year, and you're trying to get he's still a work in progress at first base, Ben Rice is. It's just his offense has been so great, and the last thing I want to do is mess with that. He's not bad.
He's not bad at first.
He's okay. I mean, he's learning the position. Some days he looks like a comp, good first baseman. There's other days where you realize he's still a neophyte and learning the position. But I agree with you in the sense that I wish there was a way you could get Goldschmidt in there more. But there's no perfect way to do this because Rice at catcher comes with a risk tag on it.
I know. Who would you get? Who would you trade for? Who would you get right there? You know what I mean? Even at the trade back, you can't get Shane Langelier because they want.
No. The A's aren't getting rid of him. I've thrown out Hunter Goodman, who's the catcher for the Rockies. I have to check out guys at contract situation. There might be a guy that could be a little. You don't necessarily need an all-star catcher. You need somebody at this point that will have more than 5 RBIs, though, going into Memorial Day, and is literally a net negative on the field, and that's Austin Wells. He just looks like a player, George, that looks. He looks like he's done. He looks shot. He looks like a guy that's completely needs a new change of scenery, and it's just not going to work for him here with the Yankees.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
I appreciate the call, bud. Yeah, sorry if I cut you off there. Yeah, Wells is the worst offensive catcher in baseball. That's how bad he is. And his defense, which normally is something you can hang your hat on and is, feel for the staff, I mean, that came back to bite the Yankees in the ass, as there was either miscommunication with Goldschmidt or whatever it was, but that inning there, things unraveled a little bit for Schlittler. I mean, Wells was a big part of that with that bunt. It's just staggering to me that you are the starting catcher for the Yankees. We are almost 2 months into the season, and you have 5 RBIs. This is a lineup that, even with some guys not hitting, they still score a ton of runs. They play in a hitter-friendly ballpark. You have 5 RBIs. 3 home runs and 5 RBIs, and you're hitting like 150. And the problem is, I mean, Aaron Boone thinks J.C. Ascara is a top 15 catcher, but we all know that's BS, because he's not. He's not even a major leaguer. And you really, because Boone was praising Ascara before the season, that's when you know that he was full of baloney, because you know what? If he is as great as Aaron Boone was saying he was, then he would go to him right now. But he can't because he stinks. And we all know it, including Boone. Because Wells is so awful. If they had any other option that was either even remotely competent as a major leaguer, they would go to that player. Because Wells is just a zero at the plate right now. Zero. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Let's go to Hector in the Bronx. What's up, Hector?
Hey, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
All right. Well, here's my Yankee play. I just want to say, Kevin Cash is an amazing manager. I give him all the props in the world. Deals with a team that doesn't put in, doesn't spend much, but always manages to be relevant.
Yep.
So I give him props, and I think he's a great manager.
Yeah, it's one of those things where Hector, it's almost like you learn survival skills when you're lost in the wilderness, because that team doesn't have a lot of resources and they have to survive in the wilderness with limited resources, and they probably better than any other franchise in baseball, excel, but they don't with limited resources. So that's a credit to him and that organization.
Yeah, giving props for that all day. Now my Yankee thing, I hate to be a dead horse, man, but this Wells situation is just a little, not a little bit, but a big, huge problem. So go to 2 months of the season and be having five RBIs. What are you on pace for, 18 RBIs for a season?
I hate to laugh, but you're probably right. He's probably on pace for like 18 to 20 RBIs, which is just, hard to even wrap your brain around. Yeah, no doubt.
Right, so my question to you is, I know they're going to be looking for a catcher come to the trade deadline. They have to be. That's be their number one priority. But we ain't going to go anywhere when a third of our lineup, and we're not steering anyway, when a third of our lineup is batting under 200, right? So my question to you is this, Lou. Is there any Scarra's trash, he's trash. We can't send these guys down, and whoever's in the minors can't be any worse than these guys.
Well, look, you've already called up Jones. You already called up Jones. You called up Dominguez. He got hurt. I think Lombard absolutely could be in play here down the stretch as possibly the third baseman. So, I mean, technically, you called Volpe up, and he's been good since he's returned. So, and he might, you know, the way he's playing, he might, despite not, the challenge he had tonight that was bad, but he's been good. He might have a role on this team as well as a utility guy. So I think there are some bodies, Rosario. There are guys that can help out either down in the minors or they've already been brought up. So that's the one guy, though, down in the farm that I think that could be a player here is Lombard for them this year.
Right. And before you I have a Mets play also. Mm-hmm. Before you get there, and the defensive, where you see the first baseman is playing close for the bunt, you see him going down for the ball. Why are you trying to go down with him? And wrestle hands with this guy for the ball makes no sense to me at all. Like, I just think his head is not in the game. He seems lost out there, and I just can't wait for. But then again, we can't trade him. Who's going to want this guy?
It would almost have to just be either he goes to the bench or you cut bait or you do something. Because you're right, there's no way you could trade from him. And yeah, he looks lost. He looks like a player that has zero confidence. Now behind the plate, certainly when he's up there. I mean, whether it was in the Subway Series where Manaea walks Volpe, and then on the first pitch when Manaea's on the ropes, Wells swings and grounds out, and it ends an inning. Yankees end up losing that game. He's a zero at the plate. He looks like a player that's defeated and needs a new change of scenery. It's just not working for him, and I'm sure the Yankees know that. But they just have no options because Scarra is not a major leaguer, and they can't start him. So they're just going to have to wait for a player to become available somewhere, and then they'll pull the trigger on it.
I hope so. But my Met point, it's not a negative or nothing like that. I just don't like the comparisons. They always got to compare Schlittler to your guy.
To Nolan McLean?
Like, why? Yeah, why, man? Why can't we just both have two studs?
Well, because you know that's the way. Yeah, I hear you, Hector, but that's the way it goes. Man. Yeah, but that's the way it works. That's the way Sports Talk Radio works, and that's the way our fandoms work. There's always going to be comparisons. I mean, that's just the way way it goes.
Well, we both got two studs, man. I'm excited to see both of them do well. Have a good night, Lou. Always a pleasure, man. Thank you.
Yeah, you too, Hector. That's just the way it works. You know, if the Nets had anybody worthwhile, they would be compared to Brunson. If Kate Klubnik, never mind. But let's trade up for him. When the Jets draft a quarterback next year, that quarterback will be compared to Jackson Dart if he can play, and that'll be a big conversation. And if I'm a Jet fan, I you've waited so long for that. If I could get a quarterback, oh boy, I would be because Dart has so much hype and Easy for me to say. Again, a little bots in the brain, a little stunad. Let's take two on that. Can I say it? Deservingly so. Deservingly so, Jackson Dart has gotten a lot of praise. So if I was a Jet fan, I would want to have a quarterback, just like with Schlittler and with McLean. You want to have somebody to go mano-a-mano, somebody that you can win in a bar fight with, in an argument. You know what I mean? Oh, no, my guy's better. Your guy's better. That's what makes this town so special. There are choices. Not everybody roots for the Phillies. Not everybody here roots for it's not Kansas City, where everybody roots for the same football team. Or like I said, Philly, where everybody roots for the same baseball team and all the teams. We have choices here. There are lines in the sand. And part of that is my guy is better than your guy. And that's what makes this town so much fun, when all the teams are good and there are star players spread out across all the teams. Soto versus Judge, McLean versus Schlittler. Brunson versus, Dart versus somebody soon, hopefully, for the Jets at quarterback. Neighbors Garrett Wilson. We live for that stuff. It's fun. 888-808-1019, deservingly so. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It's after hours. It is Lugie here in the late night. Tommy Lugauer, we have you for another 2 hours, so plenty of time to take your calls. We'll mix the Mets more into the conversation coming up, but Yankee fans, I see a few of you up there. We will get to your calls very shortly. Knicks, obviously, game two coming up at Madison Square Garden later on this evening. So a lot to do here on After Hours and a lot of time to do it. Another two. So the phone number to join the conversation, 888-808-1019. Tommy Lugauer here on The Fan.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple. Refreshing!